Thanks to all the organizers for this great workshop, and especially the invitation to visit Santa Barbara, which is always pleasant coming from Syracuse around this time of year. So I'm going to talk about some work in progress with my student, Gabriele Rigo, Chaba Chaki, another student at Cornell, Amin Ismail, and a recent student who graduated and went on to DAISY, Gemma Rangel. So what I want to talk about are these things that we've been thinking about from looking at different brain world constructions that have certain types of instabilities. And we asked the question, if you have these types of instabilities, what are the dynamics resulting in the presence of those instabilities? And how might we have a way to approach these in a systematic way? So many folks are all familiar with the fact that extra dimensions, both large and small, have been a great sort of backdrop for looking at problems with the standard model of particle physics, things like the hierarchy problem, the flavor puzzles, and or maybe extensions of the standard model, how to realize Susie breaking, things like this. Also, it offers different ways of looking at cosmology problems, like new viewpoints on the cosmological constant problem. And as I'll talk about a bit more, they have given sort of novel cosmological behaviors in the presence of different types of instabilities, or perhaps if I have some sort of macroscopic modulus displacement away from the minimum, what's the behavior of the system as it relaxes to its eventual configuration? And so a couple examples that I can bring attention to that are somewhat novel are systems of motion in brains where if there's no static or stable solution, some of the interesting consequences that might happen are in one case that I'll talk about at length over the next few slides, if you take the Randall-Sundrum two-brain model, and many of you are familiar with it, the fact that the earliest incarnations of this are need to be fine-tuned in the sense that there are brain tensions that need to be tuned against a bulk cosmological constant. And if I relax that tuning, there's a resulting cosmology of the brain world. And it's not obvious that this would be the case, but it turns out that what comes out are solutions involving not just a lambda-type cosmology, but one that involves also radiation or a behavior of a cosmology on for a particular observers where that observer sees a radiation-type cosmology. Another example, if you look through the literature that I won't talk about it at length, has sort of another aspect to this. In the story of Senn's tachyon condensation, where there's a collapse of some brain configuration, you can write down an effective theory for the rolling tachyon. And if you look at the stress energy tensor associated with that configuration as the tachyon is rolling, the stress energy tensor approaches that of a matter domination form. So again, theories that don't have actual particles in them but have, you know, correspond to motions of brains have a behavior that if you were to look at the cosmology of it, involve radiation or matter. And as I'll talk about, this has it arises from when the brains are moving relativistically, they have a sort of a novel features in terms of their cosmology. And so now you might ask, okay, we have these couple interesting scenarios that have been well studied and examined in detail. There are other models that people have looked at over the years that have their own types of instabilities that have not been studied extensively in terms of what their cosmology might be as the system is rolling down from that instability. So one example would be DGP gravity, where there's an interesting possibility of infrared modifications of GR, but it's plagued by ghosts. And what got me into thinking about this are models where you can't stabilize the Randall-Sundrum type geometry for particular reasons where there might be, for example, an ADS tachyon living somewhere in the bulk of an extra dimension. And so you might ask, what are the resulting cosmologies if I have this model with that instability and I just watch what that theory is doing as it rolls due to the presence of that instability? What are the dynamics? We have two interesting examples. What are the corresponding dynamics of these types of models? And so now I'll just spend a few slides talking about one particular example of these types of instabilities, where we take our standard Randall-Sundrum two-brain setup, where I have a UV brain and an infrared brain. There's just tensions on either brain and a bulk cosmological constant, lambda 5. And there's a static solution to this geometry if you perform the following tuning, where K is the curvature of anti-de-Sitter space, which is the space geometry in between the two brains. Okay, so now you might ask, well, what happens if I relax this tuning? There's no longer static solutions to this geometry. What is the behavior of the theory? So we need to relax the ansatz for the metric. The metric should have some sort of time dependence in it, you know, you can hammer away just solve Einstein's equations, brute force, in this context, and you can write down what the most general metric can be written down as in terms of after you've finished gauging away any redundancies, and you can write things from the perspective, for example, of a observer that's just trapped on the UV brain. So let's write solve the metric from that point of view. So A naught of t is the scale factor that is observed for a UV brain observer, somebody that's stuck on the UV brain, and in this metric ansatz, t is the proper time for that UV brain observer. Okay, now it's just a matter of kind of turning the crank. We've got Einstein-Hilbert gravity here. We can solve first for the y dependence of this y dependent scale factor A. So this A scale factor depends on the position in the extra dimension as well as on time. And you can separate out the time dependence in the most general solution. And then you can further solve for these time-dependent functions. And I want to point this out as we go along. There are always integration constants as we are solving these equations. And there's an integration constant, little lambda, that pops up when you find a relationship between these two time-dependent factors that determine the cosmology in between the brains. Okay, and so now we can follow what happens with that integration constant. What does that mean for the resulting solution at the end of the day? Yeah, so I'm assuming a flat Minkowski, FRW. Sorry, FRW on the different slices. In the static geometry, you assume flat.
I mean, why is the coefficient of the dt term not what I'm used to? What's going on there? Just in your metric at the top, is there any reason why it looks like a dot over a dot squared on the dt?
Yes, so in principle, I would have a arbitrary function, say n of t, the n of t and y in front of that,
right.
And then you can start turning the crank on Einstein's equations. And if that function here is a, you can relate n to a. So I've just sort of jump-started the crank turning on solving Einstein's equations. So there is a function there, but you can get it into this form.
So you're using the constraint.
It will be one for the observer living on the UV brain, but you can't set it to one throughout the entire bulk, right? So there's y dependence inside of A as well. Yep. So A is a function of both y and t.
I just read the second one, I'm sorry.
Yep, no worries. Okay, and after you finish all this crank turning, you can ask, okay, well, what is the actual effective cosmology for this observer living on the UV brain? And the effective Hubble is a function of that integration constant lambda and a mistune in the UV brain tension. So remember, there's a tuning between the brain tensions and the bulk cosmological constant. And delta naught is just a thing that's proportioned to the mistune between the two, the difference between T1 and the bulk cosmological constant. And so this is interesting. So without adding any stuff beyond brains and tensions and cosmological constants, you get a theory where any observer stuck on the UV brain is observing a radiation-type cosmology. So there's a big bang for this theory, and it corresponds geometrically to the case where I could imagine the brain just being thrown away, the infrared brain being thrown away from the UV brain. So as I try to track back to t equal to zero, that's the time when these two brains overlap with each other. So there's a relativistic motion of the infrared brain that is corresponding to this radiation term in the effective cosmology. So at this point, we've ignored the infrared brain completely in the solutions, and you can figure out what the infrared brain has to be doing given this bulk geometry by just performing the matching conditions of the IR brain onto the bulk geometry with the solution that we've written down up here. Sorry?
Why does it have the radiation?
Why does it have the radiation? At this point, it's just you turn the crank and it's there as one of the integration constants. And I'll say in a slide, I think you can interpret it as so when if you look at this function here, there can be zeros in the scale effective scale factor as you go through the geometry, and so there's a Rindler type horizon in the bulk typically. And you might be able to think of this radiation as sort of like an Unruh radiation for the observer on the UV brain. Okay, so far we've ignored the infrared brain, but we can figure out what its dynamics will be. We know what all of these A functions are and N functions. Those are from the bulk solutions. And we can now figure out where the brain is as a function of time by solving this complicated differential equation, all right? So what we're doing here is just saying that the infrared brain is sitting at some position r of t, and it's moving in a manner dictated by the bulk solution to the geometry. All right, and the square root factor here is what's setting the speed limit for the brain. So the brain can't move faster than light in this bulk geometry. And so you can go ahead and you can solve for the motion of the infrared brain for different initial conditions, and you get the following different pictures depending on how you start the infrared brain off at t equal to zero. And so you can look at it for various infrared brain mistunes. And so this is just tracking the position of the brain as a function of time from that Big Bang. And as I was just saying, there's a Rindler horizon at a solvable position for coordinate y as a function of time. And so as the UV brain observer is sort of peering into the bulk, there's this receding Rindler horizon. And as the Rindler horizon recedes, the amount of radiation in that observer's universe is dissipating. And so eventually, at some point, the infrared brain just comes into view for the UV brain observer. So at early times, the observer looks into the bulk and sees a Rindler horizon, and then at late times, eventually the infrared brain sort of pops up through the horizon. Okay, so this is a repeat of a story that's been studied, probably about 20 years ago now. But this, what's interesting is that you get this dark radiation from this Randall Sundrum type brain world just by mistuning UV and IR brain tensions. You end up getting a Big Bang type cosmology without the addition of any type of actual radiation. This is just pure tensions and cosmological constant. And as I said, that radiation term in the Hubble evolution for the UV brain observer appears simply as an integration constant when solving Einstein's equations. So it's there typically for your generic time-dependent solution for Randall-Sundrum geometries. In fact, you don't even need to do the mistune. You could just take RS, you could perform the tuning exactly, and these time-dependent solutions are still part of those part of the dynamics of those potential dynamics of those models. So it's like RS, where I've just thrown the brain really hard at t equal to zero. And as I said, this radiation seems sort of Unruh-like, but of course there's no quantum mechanics here. This is just classical solutions of general relativity. Okay, but now let's try to look at this same picture, but from what you would do from an effective field theory prescription. If you were just a low-energy observer and you're looking at LHC physics of the radion or something like this, what you do is you do linear perturbation theory. You take your metric, you expand in small fluctuations, and you would expand this to first order, solve the Einstein's equations, identify the spectrum, et cetera, et cetera. You'd find that there is a massless four-dimensional graviton. If you haven't added any stabilization mechanism, there will be a massless radion. And then, of course, a massive tower of Kaluza-Klein gravitons. But this description is completely ill-suited to the description of the phenomenon that I just described over the last couple of slides. A crucial component of these solutions is that that brain is moving close to the speed of light, that it has a speed limit set on it through this square root factor. And in this description here, all of those higher derivative and self-interactions of the radion are truncated out of the picture. And so this linearized theory completely fails to capture the cosmology that I described over the last couple of slides. Okay. And now we're also trained to think about the radion as through ADS-CFT as the dual of dilaton. And so you might also ask, well, what's the simplest dilaton theory I might write down? So a way to generate actions consistent with conformal symmetry realized non-linearly is to follow a coset prescription from which you get the following picture, where if I take the metric and I just rescale it by a x-dependent conformal factor, then this tau of x is the Goldstone boson of spontaneously broken conformal invariants, and you can then generate arbitrary conformally invariant actions by just building out of this metric all of the invariants that I might build in general relativity. So things like a cosmological constant plus the scalar curvature plus higher derivative terms, right? And you can keep going here, and no matter what you do here, you'll get out invariant actions if you write down things consistent with general covariance. With the simplest model, if I ignore the adding these higher derivative terms, if you expand and perform a field redefinition, putting this metric into this equation here, you get the following action for the dilaton, the typical kinetic term plus quartic that's consistent with non-linearly realized scale invariance. Now, if we are trained to think about the radion as the dilaton of some spontaneously broken conformal theory, it seems that it must not be anything close to this simplest conformal theory. And it's interesting that if you were to think about CFTs as arriving from ADS duals, 5D causality, the thing that gives the square root in the Randall-Sundrum picture that I wrote down first, it has to do with certain constraints on interacting conformal field theories. And so this was emphasized in this recent paper by Bauman, Green, and Hartmann. And so this, if you truncate the radion, this is the action that you would get. So if you do that linearized 5D gravity theory plus this calculation of the classical static effective potential, you do get this kinetic term plus a quartic, where this quartic is related to the infrared brain mistune. And so you might decide that, okay, this is a good enough effective description, and I want to use the radion for cosmology. And, oh, look at this, I can stick this in, okay, and I can write down a, of course, now non-viable theory for the inflaton, but the actual description is not even inflationary, it's instead this epoch of radiation domination. So, and any finite order truncation of the theory would miss this. Okay, So how do we do better? How do we go beyond sort of the linearized story for the radion? Well, we can go to the story of the Nambu-Goto brain action, where it's the geometry of the embedding of a brain in a space that determines the action for the brain. The square root factor is what's encoding the causality limit on classical motion of the brain in the space-time in which you embedded it. And there's a single massless degree of freedom living on the brain corresponding to the Goldstone mode from the fact that you've spontaneously broken some space-time symmetries, some space-time translations, rotations, and boosts by putting the brain there in the first place. Now, the radion action should be something similar to this. It should encode these causality constraints. The infrared brain can't move faster than C, as we saw in the dark radiation analysis. And we can approach this not just from the geometric picture, but we can approach it from the standpoint of spontaneously broken symmetries by using the coset prescription. So when we embed this d minus one dimensional brain into d dimensional space, we are breaking spontaneously a subset of the translations and rotations and boosts. And so the low energy action should be described via the coset construction, where the Goldstone bosons parameterize the coset g mod h, where g is the parent symmetry and h is the remaining symmetry. Now, just a quick primer on Goldstones and spontaneously broken space-time symmetries. The counting of the Goldstones is different when you spontaneously break space-time symmetries. That is, you can't just count the number of broken generators and expect that to correspond to the number of Goldstones. Naively, in this case, because you've broken both translations and rotations and boosts, you would expect multiple Goldstone modes. But instead, there's only one massless Goldstone boson. And the reason for this is that there's when you're breaking space-time symmetries like this, there's more than one way to make a lump on a brain. You can do it either by performing sort of local translations along this direction, or I can perform local rotations, sort of just twist the brain, and then I can use the unbroken translations to move that lump around once you've created it. So there's two ways to make the same lump. And so there's a redundancy in the description of the element of the coset that generates this field configuration. So generally, this is the case if there's a commutator of the unbroken translations with broken generators that gives another element of the broken generators. There are these redundancies. And so we should be unsurprised that naive counting gets the wrong answer. The removal of the extra Goldstone bosons amounts to some constraint relating the extra Goldstones parameterizing the coset to derivatives of the Goldstone associated with the translations. As an aside, it's actually not always a redundancy. Unlike breaking internal symmetries, when you break space-time symmetries, you have different choices as to the order parameter for the breaking of the space-time symmetry. That is, if this brain was a spinning brain of some sort, then the rotations would twist the spins and make them point in different directions. And so this would not be a redundancy, and there would be physical modes living here, but not necessarily massless modes. Okay, and so what is the formalism? How do we now build effective actions that incorporate and realize the symmetries non-linearly? So Callan, Coleman, Wesson, Zimino taught us how to do this. We write down an arbitrary element of the coset containing the Goldstone bosons, and in the effective theory, integrating out the high momentum modes, you can show that the sort of dominant, or that the interesting element that appears in the low energy effective Lagrangian is this thing called the Mora-Cartan form, which is a function of the Goldstone bosons that takes values in the algebra, where it has directions, components along the unbroken and on the broken generators. And what's nice is that these two elements transform nicely under the symmetries of the theory. And so you can use these as your Lego blocks of building your effective theory. You can, you know, trace things, stick them together, or you can use them as gauge fields to couple light matter fields, things that survive whatever symmetry breaking you had, are, you know, transforming under the remaining symmetries in the low energy effective theory. And so now going ahead and doing this with the brain. Writing down this most general element of the coset without having performed these inverse Higgs constraints yet, what you do is you just can expand out this more Cartan form, identify the different components, and you can arrange the components of the more Cartan form in a way that's suggestive of the geometry that where the brain came from. So, for example, the component of the more Cartan form along the translations takes on the symmetry properties of a fieldbine.
I have a really dumb question. If they're unbroken, why is it not linearly realized?
So the unbroken are linearly realized. Sorry, did I?
I didn't understand the last slide.
So the translations, you mean, or?
Just the symmetries that are not broken are linearly realized.
The symmetries that are unbroken are linearly realized. Yeah. The broken ones are non-linearly realized via the Goldstone bosons. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. And so, for example, you can create an invariant action using this fieldbine here. And the simplest thing you might write down is just the determinant of that fieldbine, which, if you again turn the crank on the coset that we just wrote down, gives precisely the Nambu-Goto action. So you get the without talking about the actual geometry of the brain, just talking about spontaneously broken symmetries, you get the same answer. Okay, and now these relativistic constraints arose from instead the structure of the Moore-Cartan form, this fieldbine that is this Goldstone-dependent volume element. Okay, it also, in addition, beyond this, it gives you a formalism for adding extra stuff. Like you might add sort of an extrinsic curvature on the brain, and this would just add amount to constructing different invariants from the more Cartan form and just putting more on the left-hand side. And you can get arbitrary physics that realizes the symmetries of the theory. Okay. So now what we'd like to do is see this applied to realistic brain worlds, these RS-type models, as we know the radion must be some analog of this. And so now I'll just spend a couple of slides talking about how to do this in a global anti-de Sitter. So I'm still not doing what I really want to do, which is, you know, gravity plus the radion plus everything. But let's see what interesting physics we might see by just first looking at global anti-de Sitter. Now, the isometries of anti-de Sitter space match what you would get by looking at the 4D conformal algebra. That is the symmetry breaking pattern associated with putting a brain in anti-de Sitter space is the same symmetry breaking pattern that you get that gave us the coset that allowed us to write down that dilaton action some slides ago. But there's a more natural basis for the ADS brain coset. So if I take R to be the radius of anti-de Sitter space, you might like the R goes to infinity limit to correspond to the limit in which the space-time that you're living in just becomes flat 5D Minkowski. And you'd like your algebra to reflect that in that limit. And so you can rearrange the algebra of the conformal group in the following way, where you take these combinations of the special conformal transformations and the translations, and just a rescaling of the dilatation operator. And now these two parametrizations of the coset lead to different ways to write down the coset element that contains the Goldstone. So it's just a rewriting. And there's a nonlinear map, a complicated field redefinition that relates this side to this side. These are both equal, and there's a complicated field redefinition relating y, phi, and sigma to p, eta, and zeta here. And these translate between the ADS brain action and the boundary dilaton action. And so now you might ask, so we had that way of writing down the simplest dilaton theory. What is the analog of the simplest ADS brain theory? And now we have a dictionary to go between our coset in ADS and our coset for the dilaton. So we can write down the simplest ADS brain action, which is the Nambu-Goto style action, with one subtracted. So this is just setting that effective cortic mistune to zero, effectively. And now you can ask, well, what is the image of this on the dilaton side? Let's say I perform this field redefinition. What is the dilaton action corresponding to a brain in anti-de Sitter space? And somewhat unsurprisingly, it is a very complicated function of the dilaton field that, when you know, resummed, should encode the physics associated with the fact that the dual picture, the brain, can't move faster than the speed of light. And so here we have the dilaton action that is the image of the global ADS, the global ADS radion. So the simplest action of a brain corresponds to a complicated action for a dilaton, and vice versa. Like if you try to take that simplest dilaton theory, which you can now write in, you know, using this element, this parameterization of the coset, you get some extraordinarily complicated looking theory in anti-de Sitter space. And so this isn't there something else we can learn about cosets in extra dimensions, or for space-time symmetries. This organization of the coset is actually important in the physics, our picture of the order parameter. Okay, now this is just a repeat of the earlier slide. What have we learned? Relativistic motion of the brains is a crucial ingredient. Our picture of the order parameter is an important part of writing down the effective theories, say brains versus VEVs of fields. And then the last thing that I'll have to skip this part over the next two slides because I'm out of time. Gravity is important, but it's still missing from the CCWZ description. So I've talked about global ADS and global conformal invariance, but I haven't included the gravity aspect. And so I'll just finish with Outlook. Brain worlds seem to be quite fascinating for cosmology. It would be great if we could have a generic prescription for dealing with the types of theories we might get from them. In most interesting regimes of these models, there's some sort of relativistic motion of the brains coupled to gravity, right? And as I've emphasized, truncations of the FT really spectacularly fail to capture this interesting physics with these models. And there are still many interesting models remaining with instabilities to potentially drive interesting cosmologies. These coset constructions potentially offer a path to get at the relevant physics without talking too much about the details. Okay, I stabilize this way or do this. It would be nice to just be able to write down EFTs like we have been able to do for the chiral Lagrangian for a long time. So our ambition our goal here is to develop a toolkit for chiral Lagrangians for this type of extra-dimensional physics and cosmology, expand on and classify the zoo of these models, and hopefully turn these tools onto these models with pathologies that maybe can be understood a little bit better using this language. Thank you.
All right, questions for Jay, Mark.
I would have liked to hear the slide you had to skip about how you're planning to introduce the gravitational part.
Yes. So I'll just maybe spend a couple minutes here. So the crucial thing is that when I talk about the radion, I can't talk about the radion separately from all of the other stuff that's there in the picture, the Kaluza-Klein modes for the graviton, for example. And so if it's there in the theory coupled to 5D theory, the formalism, I can't just talk about the brain. I also need to talk about all of its mixing and interactions with these bulk metric fluctuations. So how do I do that in the language of cosets? And so, okay, your work has been great to follow along to try to start doing this. And the idea is that gauge bosons and gravitons, as you know, can be viewed as Nambu-Goldstone bosons of an infinite tower of nonlinearly realized space-time-dependent global charges. And so we've tried to take this technology and say, okay, well, the graviton, the radion, all of these things are realizing all of these symmetries, or a large fraction of these symmetries nonlinearly. And if we turn the crank on the coset, prescription, then we should be able to get a handle on the effective theories of the light modes.
I think, so the question I actually had, I think this is exactly what I wanted to see here. So you just include all the KK modes and that dilatation of the S1, that you include everything in the coset.
Everything is in the coset, okay. That's right, yep.
All right.
And that's the idea. And so right now we haven't done the radion yet. We've been warming up. We first did, you know, a 5D gauge theory on a circle, then we did a 5D gauge theory on an interval. And sort of our most recent complete attempt is trying to do the KK theory, just an extra dimension compactified on S1 and doing gravity. And we, okay, and it's a bit, so I actually, I just wanted to sort of hype up Amin, who's been turning the crank unbelievably on this. And once you turn the crank on all of these spontaneously broken space-time dependent global symmetries, you get all of these elements of the Mohr-Cartan form. And if you know what you're looking for, then you can spy immediately the radion that you expect in the Kaluza-Klein theory, along with what you expect to be the gauge field. And they show up exactly where you would expect them to, given sort of our story about the brain and stuff like this. It shows up in the Fehlbein. And if you just say, okay, let's write down the simplest thing, where I just write the determinant of the Fehlbein and write down that simplest theory based on this coset, then you're going to get that square root factor again. And so it really is looking like that this volume factor from the Fünfbein in this case is going to contain kinetics, both for kinetic terms, both for the dilaton and the gauge field. And this maps on to what people have envisioned as possibilities for the generalization beyond linearized order for Kaluza-Klein theory. So this was, there was a nice paper by Maxfield and Sethi, DBI from gravity, where they posited that there should be speed limits and also sort of max E-field limits arising from this kind of structure that should follow from this. And it looks like it is following from this. And thanks for the question that allowed me to talk about these two slides.
Other questions? So you did this in ADS, so how hard is it to do it in De Sitter, and then beyond De Sitter, how hard is it to do it with De Sitter with something stitched on the end like FRW?
So my understanding is that it's not that difficult to take it. So according to Amin, he said that going to RS first was easier than doing the case for the Kaluza-Klein theory. And it's just a matter of taking your symmetries here and expanding them instead on a background with different sort of global isometries. I think once you have experience with and know how to turn these cranks, then it's not very difficult to extend it. I don't know if there are funny things that come about in De Sitter space, for example. Maybe you will see the ghosts and things like this. But no, it's yeah.
Other questions for Jay? All right. Well, if not, let's thank Jay again.
Thank you.